somebody I love, somebody you love, the world loves, and the only ones that don't love her are the ones that haven't gotten acquainted with her. And I'm not sure what she's going to talk about, but I know that I'm eager to hear what she has to say, and this is our Katie.
And we're trying new technology tonight. We have a microphone. So if you'll give me a minute. That's right. Maybe we'll actually be able to hear what's going on tonight. Okay, maybe. It will be. Okay, can you hear me in the back? Is that any better with it? Yeah.
Is that better, everybody? Mom, can you hear?
Can you hear? Any better tonight than last time?
Yes.
All right. Success.
All right.
All right. Hi, everybody. I'm going to take a minute and stop feeling terrified. Why I'd be terrified of all of you, I haven't a clue, but every time I get up here and start, I think, oh dear, what have I done? Why am I talking tonight? How about because Millie asked me to? Most of us were here last week when I found out I was talking tonight. So, besides that, why talk? And the subjects that are closest to my heart are the ones that I end up struggling with. And so that tends to be where I go looking for my subjects. Many of you know that I've struggled for a while with depression and that I've had some rough patches lately, so I thought I'd look at that in a little more detail. We've already heard talks on depression and on being a community of support for each other, so I don't need to talk about that. But I don't know about any of you, but when I feel sad and at odds with the world, one of the places I end up feeling at odds also is with God. Anybody else, show of hands, ever feel a little bit unhappy with God? Okay, anybody ever had lessons in what to do with that? I don't know about you, but I don't think I've been to a church service yet that's taught me what to do when I'm unhappy with God. And I can't promise that I will give you answers for what to do if you're unhappy with God tonight, but at least I can share with you some of my journey in what I do when I'm unhappy. I hope that will be some benefit to you. It's been a benefit to me just to get to think about it. How many of us have heard Millie in times of difficulty tell us to hold on to the finger of God? I've heard it. I've heard it a lot of times, but do you know what that means? Anybody have an idea? I know it means I'm supposed to be doing more of something, but more of what is not always clear to me. And I'm not sure, again, that you're going to come out of tonight with the answers for what that means. We'll have to ask Millie sometime, maybe, for some more specific lessons. But we are going to look tonight at the kinds of blocks that we can bring to holding on to the finger of God. And let me explain that I don't think that God is bound by a lot of the limits that bind us. However, being human, we're bound by lots and lots of things. And that when we're in times of trouble, those limits tend to come to the forefront. And that if we want to get around them, we have to learn that they're there in the first place. And then we have to learn what to do with them after that. Tonight's talk is about how we believe in God, not whether or not we believe in God, since most of us being at a church service on a Wednesday night probably have some belief in God already. This talk is not anybody's ultimate answer. I wish I had ultimate answers. If I had them, I might not need to be here on Wednesday nights. I'd have them already. Instead, I'm here seeking, and I'm assuming that you're here seeking things like community and entertainment and maybe some answers as well. Most of you know that I have some training in clinical psychology, and tonight's talk is going to draw pretty heavily from that because tonight's talk is about the developmental stages of relationship. Now, humans progress through a series of stages in relationship, first with our parents and then later with each other. I have never in my reading found anybody describe the use of those same stages in our relationship to God, but I'm assuming that the rules of thumb that we learn for relating to each other probably also apply in our relationship with God. And I'm a little bit curious about why I've never seen that. Probably because there's not a good empirical test out there for testing your relationship with God. We're a little short on answers back from God. Anyway, so I'm not 100% sure of what I'm talking about tonight. This is not from an expert's book. This is from my own thinking. And so there's a little more risk involved and a little more hope that perhaps there'll be something useful for one of us, me, if not you, by the time we're finished talking tonight. Psychological theory, backed up by research, indicates that we humans are hardwired for relationship. We come in ready to do this. We may not know how, but we absolutely need it. We progress through a series of sequential developmental stages in relationship. Those early stages are extremely self-oriented. It's just the survival and the wants of the self, whereas later stages are characterized more by an awareness of the other person or the other being in the relationship, and by an awareness of other people's needs. These stages have to happen in order, and you can't skip a stage to get to another stage because you'd lose the learning that you're required at that stage and that later stages depend on your having. Not everybody proceeds through all stages. It's possible to get stuck at an earlier stage if you don't get enough of what you need there, or, paradoxically, if you get too much of what you need there, it gets to be such a cozy nesting place that you'll never move on from there. The good news about this stage theory is that even if we get stuck at a stage, it's possible to get help later on and to resume our development if that is something that we choose to spend energy and time and probably money to do. So what does all this developmental stage theory have to do with how to believe in God? I'm going to argue that our stages of development in relationship to others, which I'll elaborate in more detail in a couple minutes, probably also set our rules and expectations for how we relate to God at any given time. Not because God is defined by stage theory or contained to it, but because our expectations and knowledge of what can happen in relationship are set by our expectations and experience in relationship. And they're limited to what we can perceive at any given time. If we haven't had higher experience in relationship, we don't know it can happen. I have no doubt that God is bigger and more powerful than our perceptions and not limited to or by them. But our capacity to comprehend and participate with God may be limited by what we can wrap our perceptions around, what we can actually grasp. And our own developmental stage in relationship may be one of the most relevant factors in predicting how we relate in all relationships, including that with God. I bet if you gave each of us a test, we would test as behaving and believing very similarly across all our relationships, including that with God. And again, I don't have data on this. It'd be fun to do. But I don't think that we behave as very young people in some relationships and very advanced people in other relationships, and yet a different level with God. I'm guessing that we behave pretty similarly across our relationships. The notion of a developmental stage is not one that we're necessarily even aware of. One of Freud's most brilliant contributions to the study of humanity is the idea that much of what influences our behavior happens totally outside of our awareness, based on accumulated early experience. He calls this part of our functioning and unconscious. The desire for relating to other people, as well as our rules and our expectations for how they're going to relate to us, are primarily outside of our awareness. It's not something that if you walk around and ask people about, they may have any awareness of. You can ask people about their childhood. One of the interesting parts about being a therapist is asking people about their childhood and what they'll tell you about it, and then what comes up in the course of doing psychotherapy with them. They're often totally different. Again, arguing for that part of us that functions outside of our awareness that then influences our expectations for behavior and relationship. We can, by curiosity and study, and sometimes with professional help, become aware of our unconscious expectations in relationship. And indeed, if we have repeated patterns in adulthood of failures or disappointments in relationships, we'll often choose to do something like enter therapy so we can understand why we have failure after failure and hope to have a different outcome possible. In some churches, this talk I'm giving would be considered heresy. To equate the relationship with God as being subject to the same rules for relationship as our human ones are would be considered highly improper. We'd be taught to obey and knock off this questioning about it. That's not the nature of this church. We're allowed to think about God, to feel, to ask questions, and to use what we learn with each other to make up the God center that Millie encouraged us to run our learning through. Like I said at the beginning, though, this talk is my opinion, and it's my opinion that we can only do what we can do, that our perceptions and expectations and habits in relationship affect all of our potential relationships, including that with God, and that our quality of relationship benefits there from some self-examination. So what are these stages of relationship I keep talking about? They are a sequence of capacity and experience-based stages, and they start with human infancy and its utter helplessness. Human infants are totally dependent on their caregivers for their survival. Without someone to feed and protect them, they will die. We don't think in the psychological research that humans are very aware of their caregivers when they're very, very young. We know that they can discriminate things like the smell of their mother's breast milk on a breast pad at birth. So they can distinguish among caregivers, but that's not the same thing as knowing that somebody's providing for them. That knowing comes later after a repeated history of having had need met for a while. How those caregivers meet early needs starts to set that child's expectation for whether it's safe to depend in relationship or not. A child who's had a history of safe, warm relating from parents or caregivers tends to form the belief that depending on other people is a safe and okay thing to do, that it's a wise decision to decide to depend and to be in relationship with others. A child whose history is of not being cared for, not one time, fortunately we're much more resilient than that, no one screw-up is going to ruin us for life, at least generally, but if they have a history of not being met with love and warmth, then they start to decide that maybe relationship isn't a safe place to be. And that's just the earliest form of relationship where the infant is only expected to receive the care given. What about later, when there are rules for relationship? Starting at the age of 3, let's say hypothetically, we expect children to be able to behave in a particular way. We no longer let them just receive. We say, sit down first, or wash your hands, or say thank you. We expect children to be able to follow some rules in order to continue to receive the care that they get. This is the beginning of a different level of development in relationship, where the child realizes that they're not given everything they want when they want it, just because they want it. That is a hard, hard loss. I think I'm not done with childhood yet myself. That very first stage where we're given everything we want just because we need it, just because we happen to exist, might be referred to, slightly tongue-in-cheek, as the Santa Claus stage, particularly as it relates to God, where all we have to do is ask and we expect confidently to be given what we need. No holds barred, no conditions. How many people in this room want to give that up? How many people have found that that as a total model for how to interact in the world works real well for them? Anybody? I've really been struggling lately with this. You know, I would think that being an adult of middle years, I would be past that already. But I find that that's not the case. It's one of the reasons why this question of the relationship to God comes up. Because when I'm under stress, or I'm sad, or I'm disappointed, one of the things I want is to be given what I want. And if I just ask a little more often, or a little louder, maybe I'll be given it. When I don't get it, then I have to be open to the idea that maybe there's another way, or another reality, or another level that I'm supposed to be responding to. And we enter into that question of whether the ruleful stage is the next stage. I would argue that that's the stage of the Ten Commandments, the Old Testament form of belief, where God taught us laws and we thought as long as we obeyed the laws, then we'd be given everything that we asked for. Anybody else ever tried to follow all the rules and get what they needed that way? Again, you'll find children of about the age of 6 or so, up through maybe 8 or 9, endlessly discussing the rules again. Sometimes they don't get around to playing the game. They're so interested in setting the rules of them up so that everybody gets what they want. I think that this is a form of bargaining. What's happened is the child has started to be aware that they're a little bit powerless in the relationship, and they think that if they do what the more powerful partner wants, which is to follow the rules, that that can then be used as leverage to get what they need. It's the beginnings of an awareness of a difference in power in the two parties. As children grow toward adolescence, however, they cease being quite as willing to follow rules for the sake of rules, and they enter the stage of challenging them. If we're wise, we recognize children's growing capacity And we stop insisting on their following the rules for the sake of rules because we're setting up a fight that we can't win. We enter the stage where children's free will becomes important in relationship, where the choice to obey or to cooperate comes in. This is based partly on a recognition that there's more than one person in the relationship, that to thrive means that both parties in the relationship need to get something that they need. We'll hear a lot about fairness sometimes early in this development, where I want what I want, but I realize that if you want to play with me, you better get what you want some of the time too. It isn't law-based anymore. It's based on awareness that you're a separate person with separate needs, and that if I want to get what I want at least some of the time, I better make sure that you get some of what you want at least some of the time. Later stages of development depend more on the recognition that there's another person in relationship. After the awareness of fairness comes the awareness that altruism may play a role in relationship. That is where I give something without the expectation of getting something back. We see a lot of this in parenthood. We see a lot of it in service to other people, where the idea is to give something but not with the idea of getting something back. Does belief in God at the stage of fairness mean accepting the idea that I have needs of God but God also has needs of me? No, I don't think so. I don't think God is defined by needs and limits like humans are. I do think that God is available differently to us as our capacity increases and changes. God doesn't change, but we do. God isn't bound by our development, doesn't have to comply in granting our wishes when we're at the Santa Claus stage of development. But perhaps our access to God grows greater and reflects greater reality as our capacity in relationship increases, bringing us closer to God's relational capacity as we become more and more like Him as we develop. We talk in this church a lot about God being love. Love is altruism. It means that your welfare is as important or more important to me than my own is. Maybe the frustrations of the stages where God doesn't meet my needs when I demand them encourages me to grow up to a higher level. Maybe I have to go through the stages in between to get there. I don't know anybody who's gone from Santa Claus to altruistic. That's too many stages, too fast. But from Santa Claus to fairness to free will to altruism, that's a reasonable progression. And I watch a lot of us here in church make some of those progressions. I watch it happen particularly in classes where I watch people practice putting themselves out and loving each other. I see a lot of it here when I see people at work in service, whether it's setting up chairs or attending meetings when you'd rather be off reading a good novel somewhere. We seem to have a gift in this church for inviting people into practicing higher levels of functioning, at least at moments. Okay. I get myself sideways and backwards here. Where am I in these stages? Well, I'm sure not in sainthood. I can relate to aspects of each stage, and particularly at times of frustration, I can feel myself wanting to return to the functioning of earlier stages. What I realized in writing about these stages is they're not stages that replace each other. We retain feet in the previous stages and just add aspects of later stages onto them. So under stress, guess what? It shoots and ladders again back to the earlier stages, at least for a while. I can tell when I'm back in demanding what I want when I want, that I've lost some ground for a while. The nice thing about God's capacity not matching mine, I think that God holds still better than I do. So I can have my conniptions and hop up and down and be unhappy and do what I need to do. That doesn't seem to move God out of God. I can come back instead and be asked to develop capacity to match God's capacity after I've had my hissy fits and upsets and agreed that they're not working for me. My limits in how I do relationship can keep me from encountering God as fully as is possible because God isn't limited like I am. That is the biggest difference between me and God. I'm human. I'm limited. I'm subject to the learning I've already done in my life.
I have boundaries. I have a time limit. My body will die. God isn't bound by those same limits. And so having a relationship where one person or one of the creatures in the relationship is bound and the other one isn't makes for some interesting mismatches. The only way I can understand this is that God, in his unlimitedness, invites me into greater and greater capacity with him as I slowly become able to respond to that capacity. Does that make sense? Okay, so making myself differently available offers God more options for access to me than does holding out for my old, familiar, limited form of interacting in relationship. So how do we come to practice something that developmentally is beyond us? The answer is the same as in all of my previous talks. It's called get help. Get help by hanging out with people who are more advanced, more loving, less limited. Maybe because their relational models never had the hits that mine did, or maybe they've just been practicing a more developed model longer than I have. It doesn't matter how they got there. You recognize them. They're the ones who are happily in service when the rest of us are struggling with what it is that I want. I recommend complaining to God, not because it changes things, but because it makes me feel better, at least while I'm deciding what to do next. My understanding is that God is not limited in relationship and invites us endlessly on with him to have the joy of developing and surpassing our previous limits if we're willing to work to keep listening and finding new ways to say yes in our relationship to him. I'd encourage you to say yes on the journey. Thanks for giving me this time.